So I'm going to go through these questions real quick that we talked, that I had on my sheet. Why do we say our God, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is the Most High God? And this is going to be the fun part. What's up with all the 70s in the Bible? When we get to it, it'll be a while. Jesus sent out 70 disciples. 70 elders went up the mountain with Moses to meet with God. God separated the nations into 70 after the Tower of Babel event. 70 bulls were sacrificed at the Feast of Tabernacles. I think I had Day of Atonement on the sheet, but it was really right after the Day of Atonement during the Feast of Tabernacles that the 70 bulls. So, next slide. What did Yahweh mean when he said, on all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgments? And what does Psalm 82 mean when it says, God has taken his place in the divine council, in the midst of the gods he holds judgment? And who are the sons of God in Genesis 6:4? And then another sons of God verse. What does, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy, Job 38:7 mean? Why is all of creation waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God, Romans 8:19? And who are they? What are we waiting for? What is creation waiting for? So, next slide. Perhaps.
One more.
There you go. Okay, so a lot of Bible study is connecting the dots. In the Old Testament, and then finding how it connects to the New Testament, and that's kind of what the New Testament writers did, is, there's Old Testament references all through the New Testament, because that's the only Bible they had. And so they're connecting the dots, seeing how that relates to Jesus coming as the Messiah, and all kinds of stuff. Salvation, what it's all really all about. For instance, the prophecies about the Messiah were scattered all over the Old Testament, were a mystery. That's what Paul calls it. They were hidden from us and from the powers and principalities so that the Father could sneak the crucifixion and resurrection upon these powers and principalities. Because if he spelled it all out, all in one spot, this is what's going to happen and when and everything. Well, let's read. This is what would have happened. This is why he did it. 1 Corinthians 2:8. Which none of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. So it was hidden as a mystery in the Old Testament. And if that hadn't happened, they might not have crucified Jesus, and the whole thing would have been out the window. God knew what he was doing there. Next slide. Jesus connected the dots for the disciples from the Old Testament, because that's all they had. In Luke 24, 27, it says, "In beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them all the scriptures, the things concerning himself." So he started opening the scroll or whatever they were using at the time and saying, "Hey, look at this. This is about me." And then found another one. "This is all about me." They didn't really understand even then. They didn't understand or connect the dots until after the resurrection. This was actually after the resurrection that he showed them this. Next slide. So I'm using some information from some books and some teachers that I've been reading the last few years. I'm using the Bible, but Michael Heiser, he wrote The Unseen Realm and Reversing Hermann, in particular those two. I use in here quite a bit, and him as an author. He's a Hebrew scholar, he tries to make it readable for people like you and me. And then David Burnett is another guy who wrote about some of this stuff, and he doesn't have a book because he's still working on his doctorate. Him and Michael Heiser are connected somehow. And then The Great Inception, by a guy named Derek Gilbert. He's on Skywatch TV if you ever want to look at that on YouTube. It's very good stuff. But he actually got to know Michael Heiser, and he really likes what Heiser writes about, so he started studying on his own. Next slide. So there's a thing in the Old Testament called the Shema, and the reason I'm actually going to jump down to that bottom line. The name, it's Hebrew word. The name comes from the first two words of the prayer, Shema Yisrael. I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I don't know how to say that right, but it means hear Israel. So. That's why they call it the Shema. And you'll see this, once you kind of connect to this this verse, these couple verses, you'll actually see it once in a while in the New Testament, and you'll realize, hey, they're actually repeating or referring to the Shema. Hey, something's happening up there. So this is in Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5, and this is the King James. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. You've probably heard that before. So it's called the Shema. And then in the ESV translation, which is a good translation, sometimes it gets things better than King James, sometimes not. But it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. So, notice in here, it basically what they are saying and what they are declaring when they speak the Shema is that our God is one. It's not saying, thank you, Taylor.
You're welcome.
It's not saying, good luck. It's not saying there are no other gods. It's just saying that our God, your God, the Lord your God, is one God. And that is true. Israel has one God, Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So, going on. Don't get scared. It's okay. When somebody talks about, oh, there might be other gods, that it might sound a little strange to you because you've never thought about it this way. But it's all through the Old Testament. And quite often we will see where it talks about this and we will just skip over it. And we know when we think that just means a little idol sitting on the mantle. So let's look at next slide. The Divine Counsel in Psalm 82. And I'm going to go through the next few slides about the Divine Counsel are quite a bit of stuff from a presentation by Michael Heiser, so I'm giving him the credit. And hopefully I can do it some justice so that you'll understand. Psalm 82:1 says, A psalm of Asaph, God has taken his place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. So has anybody ever read that and thought, what does this mean? Do you remember ever reading it? So what do you think that means? Do you think that this is just for fun, you know, pretending like God is in the midst of gods? Or what does this mean? So, if the Bible is true, and the Bible is speaking about a real occurrence, or many occurrences, then we have to understand what that means. And understanding this will help understanding a lot in the New Testament. So the Hebrew word for God and gods here is the word Elohim. And it says, God has taken his place. So here, it's using the word Elohim for God, for Yahweh. It doesn't say Yahweh, but it's using the same word Elohim. And it has to be singular because it says he has taken his place. And then in the midst of the gods requires it uses the word Elohim again when it says in the midst of the gods. So it's using the same word both times. Elohim, singular, sits, takes his place in the midst of Elohim, plural. So God couldn't be in the midst of gods unless there are more than himself, right? I mean, this wouldn't make any sense if God was just in the midst of himself. There is a plurality of gods, and he, as creator, is taking his place in the midst of this. And it says divine counsel. So, can't be in the midst of one. Next slide. More in Psalm 82, verses 6 and 7. I said, you are gods, sons of the Most High. And this is God, Yahweh, speaking to them. You are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, like men, you shall die and fall like any prince. And we may or may not get to exactly, we probably won't get to what that second verse means in this study. But here, God is calling members of the heavenly host or divine council, gods, Elohim, plural. And he's also calling them sons, which in the Hebrew is B'nai. And usually, quite often it is sons of God, B'nai Elohim is the way it's used. I am not a Hebrew scholar. I'm only going to throw a couple of these out. Don't be scared. I'm not going to try to go crazy with the Hebrew or anything. But it helps to understand some of these things. Okay, next slide. Now in Psalm 89, 5 to 7. Let the heavens praise your wonders, O Lord, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy ones. For who in the skies can be compared to the Lord? Who among the heavenly beings is like the Lord? A God greatly to be feared in the council of the holy ones and awesome above all who are around him. So here it's speaking again, the assembly of the holy ones uses that wording, very similar to divine council, the assembly of Elohim. These beings are in the skies, it says. Who among the heavenly beings is like the Lord? And they're in the skies compared to the Lord. So it can't be somebody on earth, some kind of a council on earth or whatever, or some men that God is speaking to. He's speaking to beings who are in the skies, heavenly beings. You'll find some teachers that try to say, well, this is just talking about men, because they're afraid to speak about other gods. We can't be afraid of what the Bible says. Don't be afraid of what the Bible says. We just have to understand it, okay? Divine counsel in Psalm 89, more. And this is, what happened here? Oh, okay. I don't need to read that again. It's just there. So they are heavenly beings, or B'nai Elim is the word for that, the Hebrew words. And God, Yahweh, is above all who are around him. So it's not saying he's equal, he's above. Next slide. One more. Okay. So sons of God are B'nai Elim, or Elohim. So I am going to read just a couple really quickly through these. And I have this right here to make it easier. What slide am I on? 13. Okay. So one of the little comments that Michael Heiser makes when he's going through these slides, these are my slides, but he goes through something similar, is these are real heavenly beings. They're not cartoon characters. In other words, if these are all just made up to be saying, oh, God is better than anything, then it's it wouldn't really make sense, and it would be kind of silly to say God is better than all these beings, but they don't really exist. You know, so how is he better than nothing? So in Job 38:4, this is the ESV, 38, 4 and 7. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding, and then skipping to 7, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So there it is. Morning stars, too, are related to these sons of God. Job 1:6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. So what did you think when you read that in the past? You know, who were these sons of God? What did you think?
Angels.
Angels? Okay. Anybody else? Because Satan is an angel. He's fallen, but he was an angel. Okay, good thinking. You're the only one brave enough. So, Job 2:1, again there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves, okay? And then Genesis 6:4, the Nephilim, or giants, in the King James it says, but in ESV it says Nephilim, were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. So, we are not going to go into this whole thing of the giants and the Nephilim, but suffice it to say, Mark talked about giants this morning, and he wasn't talking about a fictional character. They were real. They were real giants, and they were scary. You know, Goliath, we usually think of Goliath, but we don't really think very much that there were more giants. But there was, you know, according to Caleb and those the spies that came back, there were lots of giants, and they were scary enough, so they said, I'd rather go back to Egypt. So, but something happened, and the Bible is, you know, pretty skimpy on this, honestly, the Old Testament, about exactly what happened and how it happened and where the giants came from. But it had to do with the sons of God, who were what? Angels. Yes. It had to do with angels who rebelled, sinned. Deuteronomy 32:8. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. So this is a very important verse. I want you to remember this. This has to do with the 70. Fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. Who do you think he's talking about when he says sons of God?
Jesus.
Hmm? Well, here he's talking about angels again. It has to do with angels. Psalm 21:9, a psalm of David, ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. So, let's go to the next slide. I better not read all those, you're going to be totally, let's see, where are we at? Okay. Is everybody still awake? Mm-hmm. Are you getting anything out of this? Okay. Is it way too boring, huh? Making you think. Good. By the way, many Christians are afraid to think, and I say pish-posh. God gave us a brain for a reason, and you know, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that you have to think about if you're really going to understand it. It's just the way it is. So God put it there for a reason. So don't be afraid to think. God of Israel, Yahweh, is among or above the B'nai Elohim or Elohim. If God is above or greater than something, they have to be real. How can he be greater or above something if those somethings aren't real? It makes no sense. It's meaningless. And again, another comment from Michael Heiser, to say God is greater than Mickey Mouse strips the meaning. So, so he is greater than a real beings. Psalm 86:8, I'm going to read a couple of these. There is none like you among the gods. You know, we sing the songs. We sing these songs, but we don't think about them. So, there is none like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. And then Psalm 95:3, for the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. 96:4, for great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is feared above all gods. Okay. 97:7, Psalm again. 9. All worshippers of images are put to shame who make their boast in worthless idols. Okay, there are idols sometimes, you know, Israelites would do it too, but the pagan nations would create these little figurines or whatever, but they were a symbol and actually sometimes were animated by the real false gods behind them. So the gods were real. This is not saying the gods weren't real when they use the word idols. Where was I? Worship him, all you gods. All you gods, for you, O Lord, are most high over all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. Psalm 136, give thanks to the God of gods, for his steadfast love endures forever. Exodus 15:11, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? Psalm 138, 1, of David, I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. David believed they were real, or he wouldn't have said that. Then Deuteronomy 32:17, they sacrificed to demons that were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded. So when it says sacrifice to demons that were no gods, to be honest with you, I don't know if I can explain 100% why they say that there. But shadim is the Hebrew word there, and it usually refers to demons, you know, what we think of as demons, which we may or may not talk about who those guys are and where they came from. But demons, I just want to say this, demons are different than angels. So that's the most important thing to get here. Demons are not angels. They're related, they're spiritual beings, but they are not angels. So demons were not gods, but they did sacrifice to gods they'd never known, to real gods. So that's what that says. I did them all. Hope that's okay. Next slide. I didn't make you look them all up, though, in your Bible. So. And, you know, I might try to get some notes for you next time. All this is my little notes below my slides that help me. So if you're interested, I'll try to get some notes for you. PowerPoint wasn't very nice to me. It was supposed to make a thing of notes, but it wasn't working, so... So, Yahweh is better than who? Well, he says, none besides me. None like me. This does not imply that other Elohim don't exist. It just means that God is better than all of them. He is incomparable. He's way high. They're way down here. So, can't compare him to the rest. Next slide. So, what about monotheism? That's what we all say that we are. We are monotheistic, which means we believe in one God. So this is a concept that came up in the 17th century. They, you know, trying to figure out how to explain all of these things and came up with the idea of monotheism. And in a sense, it kind of buried these things that we're talking about. You know, people stopped thinking, oh, there's other gods. But The Israelites didn't stop thinking that. And that's what they understood. It says it all through their Bible, our Bible. And we shouldn't stop thinking that either. It does mean, however, that our God is one, like the Shema. We, our God is Yahweh. He is our the one true God. He is the creator of all else. So all those other gods are created by Him. So that's why He's much higher than they are. So who are the Elohim in the Bible? God, the God of Israel, for one thing, when it says He used the word Elohim for God, our Yahweh. So he's an Elohim. The gods of the divine council, where He sits among the divine council, those are Elohim. So the word can be used in many different ways in the Old Testament. That's one thing that's been confusing to people, is because they thought whenever you see Elohim, it means our God, but it doesn't always mean that. It can mean many different things. So our God is an Elohim. He's a spiritual being. But all these other beings are also referred to as Elohim. So all the gods of the nations, Ashtoreth, that's one of them that it mentions in the Old Testament, the god slash goddess, sometimes they're male and female, of the Sidonians, Chemosh of Moab, Milcom of the Amorites, even Baal, all of those are Elohim. Next slide. We have, one more. I keep forgetting to look up there and see what's happening. Who are the Elohim in the Bible? Also, demons, which it refers to as Shadim in the one part of Deuteronomy, but also sometimes it calls them Elohim also. They are spiritual beings, so they fit into this category of Elohim. Disembodied human dead. Well, when you're dead, you're disembodied. You are away from your body. So, in 1 Samuel, when Saul went to the witch at Endor, and she brought somebody up, calls him an Elohim. She brought up Samuel, and it surprised her. She didn't think that was really going to happen. But it calls Samuel an Elohim. So this is how we know it means also human dead, human, the spirit of a human. And then angels, I'm not going to read these verses. So there's no specific attributes. In other words, if it does this, this, and this, it's an Elohim. It's basically any spiritual being is an Elohim. So I am going to the next slide. So it's more like where they live rather than what type of being they are. So, just that they reside in the spiritual world. Yahweh, demons, disembodied dead, angels, and gods in the divine council. Next slide. So, in order of authority, so to speak, or how do you say it? Importance? Huh? Hierarchy. Beautiful. Why didn't I put that on here? So, the divine council order, Yahweh, the Godhead, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but didn't have that in the Old Testament yet, didn't understand that. He's top. And then the sons of God, or the rest of the divine council, and also and Malachim, that's just another Hebrew word, which is the Hebrew word for angels or messengers. So we don't really know all the hierarchy, but there seems to be a difference between regular old angel messengers and then some of these other sons of God that were maybe a little higher. It's hard to know for sure. However, the princes of Daniel 10, that's a good thing too. This is slide number 20. So I am going to read this little verse out of Daniel. Then he said to me, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia. So this angel came to talk to Daniel, and he was withstood by the prince of Persia, which was another angel. And Michael, apparently, chief princes, that means he was higher in the hierarchy of the angelic beings. Michael came and helped him make it to Daniel to be able to speak to him. So there you have an example of kind of a little bit of hierarchy of the angels there. So God's government of the creation of the cosmos, it's another word for it, was meant to include loyal divine beings and loyal glorified human beings, starting with Adam and Eve. So that was the original idea in Eden, was for a divine council of a mixture of divine humans who were loyal to God and divine beings who were loyal to God. Not every being, whether human or divine, are loyal to God, right? But we have a choice, and they have a choice too. So, next slide. How are we doing? Still awake? Can we go for another 20 minutes, or is that too long? Okay. Earth would be ruled from Eden, headquarters by God with his loyal council. This was God's plan. What are you laughing about? What are you smiling about? Paul. Yeah, I see you guys on your phones.
You're not looking at me.
Whatever gets you through. So at the return of Jesus, this rulership will be reinstated. This was God's plan. Eden was God's plan. A divine council of loyal beings, including humans, was God's plan. And he loves to have a big family, and especially a family that gets along and that loves him. And so this is, you know, one of the major reasons for the return of Jesus is to bring back what the Garden of Eden started and was intended to be. Divine Council members have rebelled throughout history. Deuteronomy 32, we've already read that. They sacrificed to gods they had never known, blah, blah, blah. Psalm 82, in the midst of the gods, and it says, in the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. So he was judging these beings in that psalm for things that they had done wrong or rebelled about. And then, of course, demons are rebellious. We're not still, at this point, not going to talk about who they are exactly. Next slide. God's government, or divine governance. God wants to share the decision making with you and I and his divine counsel. So let's look at just, see if I wish I could just say this without reading all of them. I'm going to have to read it. Micaiah said, this is 1 Kings 22:19-22. Therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I mean, this is a really good example, and there's not a lot of them in the Old Testament, so I got to read this one. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? So who's he talking to? Yeah, good word. So he's sitting on his throne, and all of the host of heaven standing beside him, the divine council on his right and left. And one thing, this is, and said one thing, and another said another. Okay, so they were each saying, you know, each giving their ideas. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord, saying, I will entice him. This was his idea. And the Lord said to him, by what means? And he said, I will go out and will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And he said, you are to entice him and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. So this spirit being, I don't know if this was a bad spirit or a good spirit, but he had an idea and God said, okay, that's the one we're going to go with. And he said, do it, you're going to succeed. So this is how God works in his divine counsel. You think that's the only time that ever happened? I think this is an example of how God likes to work in the affairs of men, is through his divine counsel, which can sometimes include people, loyal people. Okay, gotta read this one too. This is from Daniel 4, several different verses. I saw in the visions of my head as I lay in bed, and behold, a watcher, which is another category of angels, don't know where they are exactly, but a watcher, a holy one, came down from heaven. You can see, you know, obviously it was a spiritual being, came down from heaven. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, I'm jumping to verse 17, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will, and sets over it the lowliest of men. And because the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze, and the tender grass in the field, and let him be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field, till seven periods of time pass over him. Talking about Nebuchadnezzar. This is the interpretation, O king, it is a decree of the Most High which has come upon my lord the king. So here a watcher is doing God's bidding with Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, next slide. So we saw this earlier, the divine counsel order. And then other Old Testament beings that are in the mix somewhere, probably on the sons of God level, don't know exactly, because the Bible isn't 100% clear, but probably higher than the messenger angel, the Malachim. There's the cherubim, which it's, the Hebrew scholars know this, the you know, the ancient scholars know that this means a throne guardian, and this is, it's kind of shown in Ezekiel, where it talks about the wheel within a wheel and all that stuff. But cherubim is a throne guardian, the seraphim is a throne guardian. They may be the same, I use a different word, because the words are come from actually some other ancient languages. So they might be the same, or they may mean something just a little bit different. And then I put this word, the Satan, because that's how Satan is called in the Old Testament. Oh, okay. Ha-Satan, I thought you said that.
That is what I said.
Okay, Ha-Satan is the way it is used in the Old Testament, and it kind of sounds, it's the adversary, it kind of sounds like it may not be the same guy all the time, but then he becomes, you know, Satan in the New Testament, so probably is the same guy all the time. Anyway, the adversary, that's what he is. So those are other beings in the divine counsel order. Okay, next slide. So, some of these questions that we had, I believe, now, if you think about it, have been answered by the looking at the divine counsel worldview, which is the way God looks at things. The way the Old Testament looks at things, and the New Testament. So why do we say our God, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is the Most High God? Now we know, right? And what did Yahweh mean when he said, on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments? We didn't actually talk about that, but what do you think he meant? Were those, when you've read that before, have you thought, oh, just talking about those idols in there on the mantle of their fireplace in Egypt, he knocked them over. That was executing judgment. No, they were real gods. They were real fallen angels that Egypt worshipped. When Egypt worships Osiris, Osiris and Horus, Isis, okay, those gods and goddesses, those are real. There's a real fallen angel behind those names. Okay? So when God said, I'm going to execute judgments on these gods, he really did do that. He wasn't making it up. He wasn't just saying it just for fun. What does Psalm 82:1 mean when it says God has taken his place in the divine council? Okay, we know what that means now. Who are the sons of God in Genesis 6:4? We know they are fallen angels or angels that rebelled. What does, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? We know that that means angels at the time. Okay, so this means that God created the angels before he created creation, right? Because there were morning stars, there were angels, there were sons of God watching creation happen when Yahweh created the universe, created Earth, and decided to center this whole business on Earth. But they're all shouting for joy. They thought it was a great thing. Then a few of them decided to change their mind on that. That is kind of the end of the divine counsel part, and then we can go to the 70s questions. So I think we'll take the next 10 minutes to go through a couple. Does anybody have any questions? If I could even answer any, but does anybody have any questions before we go to the 70s? Yes?
Just thinking about all this stuff. I was wondering, you said the sons of God are fallen.
Well, sons of God can be, well, they don't have to be the fallen angels.
Okay. And they were shouting for joy when creation was made.
Those were good, yeah. They were all unfallen at that point.
Yes. That was my question. When did that happen?
I don't know. And I don't think we actually know. The Bible is not clear on a lot of that stuff. Is way back. You know, it gets a little filmy back there, hazy. Maybe we'll find out the full answer when we get to heaven, whatever that means. But when Jesus, you know, and this is a question in my mind even now, I'm not sure if I have made up my mind, but when Jesus says, I beheld Satan fall like lightning, is that talking about back when he fell, or is it talking about in the future, because there's going to be a showdown, and he's definitely a goner then. So the 70s questions, we'll just look at a couple. So they basically are answered at Babel and God's judgment at Babel. All the 70s questions have to do with what happened at Babel. So in Genesis 10, it lists the nations that came from the Babel judgment. It lists all of these nations. And guess how many there are? Yes. And so what happens is Genesis 10, it says, so here's all the nations that came from the Babel incident, and then it goes to 11 and says, so this is the story of Babel. You know, if I was going to advise God, I would say tell the story first and then say, so all the nations came out of that. But he does it the other way. It's Moses who wrote it down. you know, here's all the nations, and this is why. This is the way it happened. So, I think we need to read this. This is very important to our 70s. Then maybe we'll be done. Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Now the whole earth had one language and all the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen. How do you say that? For mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. And then in Genesis 10, 1 and 32, I'm going to start at 1 and I'm going to jump all the way to 32, because that's kind of the end of the whole, after he lists all the generations. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Sons were born to them after the flood. These are the clans, clans of the sons of Noah, according to the genealogies, in their nations, and from these nations spread abroad on the earth after the flood. Okay. I just want to throw one thing out that I don't have in my notes. Another, one of the meanings of Babel is gate of the gods. So I just want to throw this out. Nimrod was trying to do something, and the people of Babel were trying to do something that, you know, if he was successful, we would have gone back to how it was before the flood in the days of Noah. And so God wasn't going to allow that to happen. And maybe we'll talk about that. I don't actually have that in my notes, but maybe we'll talk about that a little bit some other time. But with that, we will go on next week to more 70s. And I have a few bonus 70s, by the way, that aren't in my little sheet. So it will be fun, I think. If you've had any fun yet, it will be more fun. So, all done.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.